Hi, my name is Teresa.
Hi, Teresa.
And I am an adult child, for sure. I need to invite higher power in because speaking is a challenge for me. And so higher power is going to do for me what is very difficult for me to do for myself right now. And I appreciate your patience. I'm going to try to go nice and slow. Okay, so I think I'd like to start with my story of where it all started with my family of origin. And it's kind of a complicated story, that part of it, because both of my parents were married, my mother was married 3 times, my father was married 6 times. I have 9 siblings with all of that. And as far as the home that I grew up in, there were 6 of us. I was the 3rd born. So when I was born, my mother was on her 2nd marriage. She had 2 children already. And in fact, when she was pregnant with me, my older sister, who is out of my 9 siblings, the sister older than me is my only sibling that shares the same mother and father. And we are less than 1 year apart. So we were very close in age. We're the same age for 2 days out of the year. So my mother was pretty stressed out. And at the time that I was born, she was already realizing that her marriage was not going to work out. And I think my father left when I was about 3 years old. So there was a time when she was single, and I believe I was about 6 when she remarried with my stepfather. I didn't see my biological father after he left. He reappeared several years later and then was in and out of my life. And there wasn't alcohol in my home. I imagine there was when my biological father lived there, because he was alcoholic and his parents were alcoholic and my mother had alcoholics on her side. But actually, after my father was gone, there was no alcohol in the home. But my stepfather had some issues, definitely some emotional and psychological issues, and there was a lot of rage and emotional abuse, some physical abuse, but mostly a lot of rage that was unpredictable. The thing that stands out for me is that there wasn't a solid male figure in my home growing up. With my father being gone, then my mother started dating my stepfather, and he was this handsome guy, very playful and loving to us while he was dating my mother. And we fell in love with him. And we were very excited about them getting married. So it was very shocking after they actually got married and he moved into our home that he explained to my mother that he wasn't comfortable with us calling him dad, and that he didn't want to be our father, and that we had a father and he wasn't it, and it was too overwhelming for him to take on that role. So she needed to talk to us and explain to us kids that we needed to call him Elliot by his name and not dad. And I just remember that sat with me. Really, that hit me really hard, really hard. And that, from that day forward, was where the separation happened, because he and my mother went on to create a family for for themselves, and my two older sisters and I were left to raise ourselves. We were separate from their family, although we lived in the same home. So it was really strange. And right then and there, I realized that I didn't belong, I wasn't enough, and I didn't have value. It just, that was the message that I got. And that's where the loneliness, the awkwardness, the self-esteem issues came in, and from then on I felt like I had to prove myself and I had to perform. And that's where, you know, the people pleasing and the perfectionism and the, you know, all of that started coming in, because in order to get attention or recognition or to earn some form of love, I felt like I had to be doing something at a very high level to get that attention. So, gosh. It was awkward. It just was an awkward way to grow up. And there was different abuses happening in the family. You know, my stepfather would rage. We weren't allowed to have friends in the house. We didn't sit at the same dinner table as my parents. So they sat in the dining room and we were in the kitchen, and we were kids and we would be playful, and we weren't taught table manners or anything like that. So we played at dinner time. That, you know, we were a bunch of kids without adults at the table. Well, that would get us in trouble, and we'd get sent to bed without dinner and things like that. It just, you know, just weird stuff. And we had to do chores. We weren't included on family vacations. It felt like slavery, actually, to me, because I didn't feel the love that came with being part of a team and keeping up the household and contributing by doing the chores and all that. It was more like, you have to do this, you know, and that's your job. That's your job. So basically, there was a lot of pain, a lot of discomfort. My two older sisters sort of paired up, and so I became kind of a loner in the whole grouping. And I learned later on, you know, they were kind of mean to me and teased me, and they were the only two that I could count on, you know, on our section of the family. Although they sort of started to push me away and exclude me and tease me. And I learned later on that they were hurting because they had been abused sexually, and they were in pain, and I hadn't shared that experience that they had. And so again, it was just, I felt separate from them also. I'm really struggling. From there, basically, my teen years were awkward. You know, everything was awkward. Relationships were awkward. And for me, middle school was my introduction to alcohol and drugs. And that's where I found comfort, because I had a lot of anxiety and a lot of social awkwardness, so the drugs and alcohol were comforting to me. That they were my answer, and the people that did them became my family. They understood me, and that's the direction I went. So unfortunately, My education suffered because the drugs and alcohol affected me and my ability to function in school. But I managed, and you know, managed to finish school, went on to college, still drinking and drugging, struggling. I think my goal by then was to get married and start a family of my own, because I wanted to create something I felt I didn't have. So I met another alcoholic, of course, because those were the kind of people I was hanging out with. And my husband and I did the drinking and the drugs together. That's what we did. And I thought that once I started having children, that that would stop and things would settle down. But it didn't. And I worked really hard to try to manage all of that and be the wife and the mother. And, you know, I relied on substances, actually, to just, that was my medicine, because things weren't manageable at all. And I forgot to mention about my personality. I was kind of high strung and chatterbox and kind of annoying, maybe. So people, yeah, I think I was annoying. You know, I just didn't know how to be. And so the drugs just kind of chilled me out. They just chilled me out. And people liked it when I was sedated. They liked it. So that's how I used that, you know. And I lost my mother at an early age. She was 47 when she passed away. So that was another big thing in my life that was painful. But I never really had her all along, because, you know, I was abandoned because she, you know, spent all her energy and time with this other family of hers. And I remember in the house we grew up in, there was a family room, and there were these 8x10 portraits, you know, the senior pictures of you in high school or whatever. And there was one of all six kids up on the wall. And I remember a period after we had moved out, us three older kids, my stepfather took our pictures off the wall and he put doubles of his kids. And it was the strangest thing. And I remember being so upset with my mother, like, how could you? You know, how could you do that? But that's just the stuff that happened. And so there I was in my married life, and it wasn't good from the get-go. It wasn't good from the get-go. I married someone who couldn't be in relationship, couldn't be responsible for his own feelings, and he was very much shut down, and I was very much alone in that marriage. Very much isolated in that marriage. And we just went through the motions, you know, and our drinking and drugging time was really the only time we were together at all. And I used to think that that was intimacy, but it was a false experience of intimacy. I know now what intimacy is in recovery, but I didn't know then. So that went on for a while. He actually went into recovery and early on, and it didn't last very long, and I was told to go to Al-Anon, and I started seeing a therapist at that point, but no one ever asked me about my drinking. And it was so funny, because in Al-Anon, I didn't get it. I didn't, you know, so I eventually made my way into AA from Al-Anon, because once I got into AA, it was like, oh, yeah, these are my people. This is the stuff that speaks to me. But I wasn't willing to let it go. I think I got sober for about a year and a half, about 17 or 18 years ago. And then I talked myself into thinking that I wasn't alcoholic, and it was my husband that was the alcoholic. So I went back to it. And there was a lot of damage going on. I do want to tell you that my main pattern of behavior is codependency, that whole caretaking and codependent role. I was really good at it, and that's how I found value for myself, is by taking care of others so that I could feel some type of love back from them. It didn't work, but I got bits and pieces, and that was enough. Early on into my marriage, when I realized my husband was not available, my firstborn was a son, and I put all my energy into that boy, and he was beautiful, and he was precious, and he was the easiest child in the world to raise, just so fun-loving, and his second grade teacher nicknamed him Mr. Effervescent. I mean, he just was beautiful. And he was such a gift in my life. He brought me so much joy. But what I didn't realize is that I fell in love with him in a very unhealthy way. And I loved him more than I loved myself. And that, you know, that took another form later on. My daughter was born 4 years later, and she was just a pistol from the get-go. She came into this world not wanting to be here. She did not. She was resisting this world from day one. But I know now that she was sent to me to teach me a lot of things. She was not going to tolerate this dysfunctional way that her parents were living, and that the way our culture was. I mean, she got into school and it was just, she still struggles. She's 25 years old and she struggles with our culture and the way things are. But because she was difficult, it started waking me up. I came out of that, you know, that entrancement with addiction and just being checked out and not taking responsibility for my behavior and all of that. I had to be responsible now because she was holding me accountable, and she was so in my face with everything, you know, and calling me out on everything. So that was a big change in my life. About 11 years ago, my son became addicted to some pretty hardcore drugs, and because I had been in the drinking and drug world, I knew all about it. I knew what that was about, and I thought I could be there for him and be his confidant, you know, and I was. He could talk to me about anything. But I got really sick, and I didn't understand that I couldn't help him. I thought I could. So basically, that was the tipping point for me, is when my son and his addiction took full force. I had already accepted my husband's addiction issues. But when it happened with my son, that was just a tipping point for me. And I couldn't function at work. My physical health just fell apart, and I was paralyzed. Nothing was working, and I fell apart. I became suicidal. I didn't want to be in this world. I was devastated with my life and where it had gotten to. And I happened to be at an educational conference. Oh, I was working with a homeopath, I should say. and for nine years before I came into recovery. And it was this type of work that she was doing with me was spiritual, but I hadn't connected to higher power yet. She was doing that part with the intuitive work she was doing. But we got to a point in my sessions where she says, okay, Teresa, it's time for you to let go of the alcohol because it's time for you to get connected with your higher power. And so, of course, I tried to quit drinking and I couldn't. And I realized I needed to go back to AA because I knew that it was there. Went back to AA, started working the steps. I got my same sponsor that I had 18 years ago. It was amazing. She was the first person I saw when I walked in the door. First person. And it was just like I had just been there 18 years later. And started working the steps with her. But I was still struggling. I was struggling with this, with my feelings and everything that was coming up without substances to medicate. So I kind of pulled away a little bit, but then I was at this educational conference and I ran into a fellow traveler and we began talking and we started talking about recovery and I was telling him about my son because that's all I could think about was my son. You know, I just had to fix my son. And he told me about Naranon and we talked a little more and then he told me about ACA. I'd never heard of these programs. So 11 months ago, end of April, I started going to ACA and I started going to Naranon. And my whole world just changed, you know. Prior to that, I do need to mention that in the work I was doing with my homeopath, and it just involved a lot of prayer and writing and meditation. And I did ask my higher power to show me my people because thus far in my life, I just didn't belong anywhere and didn't fit in anywhere in this world. And that's why I wanted out. I wanted out of this world because it was too difficult. And I couldn't find anybody who felt the way I did or had the same behaviors that I had. So I had been praying, and sure enough, this person shows up, you know, at a non-recovery, you know, event. And then we start talking and learned about that. So that was higher power for sure. And as soon as I came into ACA, I heard the sharing, and I, oh my goodness, this is intense. It's intense. You know, it was super emotional, super emotional. And it took me a while. It took me several meetings to even start to be able to even talk or to share. And then to begin crying and feeling my feelings. It's been a process. It's been a process. I was lucky because I did start hanging out with old timers in the program outside of meetings, and I was told to just go to as many meetings as I could and to talk with people outside of the meetings and to, you know, participate, because even when I first came to ACA, I was isolating. By the way, I should mention that when I first came into ACA, and I forget, one of the end of the meeting affirmations is, you know, I have a right, you know, to be in this world. There's a place for me in this world, something like that. And that was me. It was like all of a sudden it clicked that I have a right to be here and to have a space for myself. I did have to leave my family. The dysfunctional family that I recreated, you know, from my family of origin. I thought it would be different, but I just recreated, you know, a lot of the same stuff. So I had to leave. But then having my own apartment and living on my own for the first time in my life, I was isolating. And I was in ACA, but I was still isolating. And luckily, people in the program were calling me and checking in on me. And that was always what helped me, because I still wasn't at the point where I was calling and making the phone calls. So they were calling me at first. And it was always exactly what I needed. You know, they would share something that was going on with them, and it was exactly connected to something that was going on with me. And there was always this exchange. And, oh gosh, I was hysterical in the beginning. And one of my sweet friends who's in this room tonight, she knows. I mean, we just bawled and cried and shared a lot of experience together. And thank goodness she was there for me. And others were there for me too. And I didn't know how to do relationships, so this was the tricky part when I came into ACA. And that thing about learning to take responsibility for ourselves and to have relationships with people that can also take responsibility for themselves, that was going to shatter that codependency thing for me. I really needed to get that piece because I didn't know how to do it. I was really into the conforming myself to what I thought you wanted me to be. I always lived my life for other people. I didn't even know who I was until I started doing this work. So I had also dropped off of AA and left my sponsor. I left off at step four. And all the columns, you know, and the inventory and all of that. I had five spirals of stuff, and it was crazy. So I wanted to get a sponsor in ACA. I thought this is the program I want to work. And it was suggested, well, you know, ask Higher Power to send you, you know, to let you know who would be good. Start interviewing people in meetings. So I prayed. You know, and I was going to a lot of meetings. I will say that I was in a position of being off work for the summer, and I could go to a ton of meetings. So it really worked out perfect when I was new to ACA. So I was going to a ton of meetings, and it was so great because this woman in one of my Sunday meetings, that I was fairly new to this meeting, didn't know people real well there, but boy, Higher Power just said her name to me and her face, and it just popped out. I thought, okay, I hear you, I get it. And I started started talking to her after the meeting about sponsorship, and in our sharing, she found out that I was in AA. And she says, well, did you finish your steps in AA yet? I says, well, no, I left off at step four. And she says, well, you're in luck. I have, you know, 30 years in that program, and I can help you finish up those steps. Let's work on those steps first, and then we'll do the ACA. So that was just a huge gift. And she was so perfect for me because, you know, that whole thing with our traits, you know, the fear of authority figures and being told what to do, you know, I just, or me wanting to please, you know, the person I'm working with, she understood me, she understood all my little funky quirks and how I can ramble on sometimes and how I get really distracted and how my brain kind of works differently. And she knew all of that. She had it down, you know. We had such a great connection. We still do. And she reminds me how much she benefits from our relationship. And I feel so safe with her. So safe. And that, you know, I hadn't had those kind of relationships. But I'm having them now with people in recovery. And I'm learning how to do it, little by little. But that sponsorship relationship was really special for me because I needed to experience intimacy with another person. I didn't know how to do that. I had lots of friends, and I've always been pretty social, but I didn't get too close to people. And so the sponsorship relationship has made all the difference, because I didn't have family members either in my family of origin that I could go to with a lot of my stuff. So that was key. And then working the steps, and the transformation was starting to happen. Although I just still had a lot of stuff. You know, I'm still new. I'm still new to recovery. You know, it's less than a year in ACA. And so what I love about this, one of the tools that helps me with that is, and I know that most of you probably have heard this and seen it in action, but Duncan and his 12 steps in 12 minutes, you know, the spot application of the 12 steps, you know, he did that with me early on, and I got to experience the steps right away. I didn't have to wait for a year of doing all the deep work. I'm still going to do the deep work. I still am doing the deep work with my sponsor, but that spot application just made such a difference for me, and it's a tool that I use all the time. I had to watch him doing it. I go to a lot of meetings, and we go to a lot of the same meetings, and I would watch him do it with newcomers and old timers and everyone. And I had to just keep, you know, I would just observe and watch and sometimes join in and do it with them, and I'm starting to get it down. I have it in my phone because I took little notes to shorthand of how to, you know, just get through them quickly, and just to the issue that is right present, one issue at a time. And it's probably my best tool right now for doing the daily living at work, at home, in my relationships. That 12 steps at all times, just using it across the board in my life. And that the other thing I realized, because I'm very active in Nar-Anon, is that working the steps in all these programs, that it transfers for me. It overlaps and it transfers. And I can speak about it in different programs, and it's all the same, really, for me. So ACA for me is my recovery. I was trying to do my family's recovery before coming here, and I didn't know about all my stuff. So more is being revealed little by little. In fact, the reason I'm sitting in this chair is I've got back spasms really bad. They started last Saturday, and then I got this head cold thing and all this congestion. And what came up out of all that, and working with my homeopath and also working the steps, it came up, is I have some suppressed anger, and I've been resisting feeling this anger. And I haven't always resisted anger. You know, I'm a reactor. That's one of my traits. I'm a reactor. But I did a lot of reacting in my family, especially the one I created with my husband and kids, because I didn't know what was happening with me, so I was constantly reacting. And so when I left that house and started recovery, I kind of put myself in this place. Well, I wasn't reacting because I wasn't in that environment. And I was with people from recovery, so I felt calmer. I was less reactive. But also a piece of that is I was trying to behave myself. So again, you know, I've got these new friends now in recovery, and I'm trying to do relationships. And my work relationships are different too now. I'm doing much better at work. But I have this part of me that's trying to behave. Well, it's pushing down stuff. And what came up, which was really interesting, was I have anger towards my mother from the abandonment and the neglect that happened in my childhood. And I just was not willing to be angry at my mother. I had all my anger directed at my stepfather and at my biological father. And I saw my mother as the victim. And by doing some of this work, I was able to... Oh, here's the thing about my mother. She was very gentle and kind. And she was also very submissive and passive. That was a trait I learned from her and my grandmother. But what I didn't know was that that was also a mask that she was wearing, and she wasn't dealing with her messiness and her feelings. And she kept that cover of the kind, you know, being kind and gentle and submissive, and you know, that's how she gained the love of her husband. So I didn't see her as the addict, but she was a love addict, because she wore that mask, and she conformed and used those behaviors to gain the love and approval in her relationships, both from her parents and from her husbands. And she got very sick and died from cancer. And I believe there's a direct link when people choose not to deal with their messiness and their emotions, and it gets really bottled up. And I've had a lot of physical problems because of my own stuffing and suppressing. So this anger piece, I just wasn't willing to be angry at her. But I have to do it. I have to let it out. I've been trying. I've been working on it all week. And basically, I was a train wreck coming in here tonight. I didn't think I'd even be able to speak. And I know that I feel a little bit scattered, even with my story now, talking to you. But I love that I'm talking to a group of people that know exactly how I feel. And they're not going to judge me. And they're going to love me anyway. And that was another thing that happened for me in ACA, is people loved me before I could love myself. And I'm just now getting that self-love piece. I knew I had higher powers love, and that was huge. That was a huge connection piece for me. But the self-love piece has been critical. And the main focus that I have had recently is to stay present with myself and not abandon myself. When I speak, I need to slow down and actually listen to what I'm saying and think about what I'm saying and then say it. I used to just ramble and get really anxious and talk really fast, and all this stuff was coming out really scrambled. And it was because I was abandoning myself. I wasn't present while I was speaking. And right now, I'm learning to stay present, even when I'm uncomfortable. And working with newcomers, I got to stay present with myself. And I've got to do the empathy piece with myself as I'm hearing their stuff. And I gotta do the loving parent and stay with myself before I can even attempt to give back and to share with them. It's really that self-love piece is really critical for me. I thought I could come in and, you know, all of a sudden start working with others and I want to help others. You know, I'm a fix-it person. I'm the codependent. You know, I'm the caretaker. And I am really good at those things when it comes to cooking and taking care of you if you're sick or, you know, all like that. But I also did the unhealthy part, you know, where I would abandon myself for your needs, you know, and I would love you more than I loved myself. And that wasn't good for you or me. And luckily, people in recovery know how to spot that. and they can call me out on it. And, oh, yeah, you know, that's what I love about step 10, is I can keep a watch on myself. I'm starting to recognize those patterns, those ways of behaving that I was using in my life that was dysfunctional. And I have a whole different belief system now. Oh, here's another thing that has changed for me that has been really huge in my recovery, is I lived the life of a victim. And all these terrible things happened to me, and people were doing all these things to me. And what I know now is that I'm doing these things to myself. I am creating all of this stuff. My discomfort, I'm creating my discomfort and my agitation with what someone else is doing or the circumstances of what's happening around me. Things I have no control over. I was creating this discomfort and this agitation, but I thought it was what they were doing to me, you know, or that I was, you know, my life, I just have bad luck and these things, you know, my life stinks and gosh, nothing is going right. You know, so I have learned that when I get uncomfortable and agitated, I can now look inward and I can say, okay, what's going on here? You know, what am I powerless over? And I am I willing to give it to higher power? I already know that my higher power can restore me to functionality. I've experienced that time and time again, so I know that piece. But then the step 3, to be willing to give that piece over when I'm irritated and wanting to control a situation or think that I have power over it. So can I give it to higher power? Okay. But then I need to do the rest of the steps, because that's how higher power gets to do the work that higher power is going to do anyway, whether I, you know. But you know, the thing is I used to think that, oh, all these terrible things are happening, and that's just my journey, and that's higher power's will for me, and that's higher power's will for my son. You know, this drug addiction issue. I mean, he's just a mess. He's dying. It's the saddest thing ever. And I used to believe, like, oh, that's higher power's. It's not higher power's will that people suffer from addiction. And that's my belief that I own today, is it's not higher power's will that people suffer from addiction. It's because it's a consequence of them not being connected with higher power and surrendering to let higher power drive the bus. They're trying to drive the bus. They're trying to run their lives and control. I did it for years. And so of course it was going lousy. But those were the consequences of me not being connected to a power greater than myself. So a lot of things have changed for me in how I perceive things and how I do life. And learning to say no, you know, even if it means someone's going to be uncomfortable, that I need to let that be what it is. I used to think I could control how you felt, so I wasn't going to say no, and I wasn't going to upset you. And what I'm realizing now is there's just a lot of things I don't get to do. There was a workshop. No, it was a conference, an Ardon conference that I attended up in Bakersfield recently. And I was so excited to be part of this. I heard about this business meeting that was going to happen with the regional representatives, and there were some issues that had been happening. And Duncan was going to do his 12 steps in 12 minutes with this group in this business meeting, and I was so excited because it's so higher power centered, when that 12 steps in 12 minutes. I've seen it so many times, but I wanted to see it in this setting with this particular group, and I'd been anticipating, and I sat down, we were all in a circle, and 5 minutes into that meeting, my stomach just started going bananas, and it was just turning and turning. I'm like, no, oh my God. And I had to remove myself from that room, and I thought, oh my God, I had to get out of that room, or I was going to have an accident. And I got out of that room, and I'm sitting out in the hall, and I'm out in the lobby, and there's this whole NA convention going on, and there's people everywhere. And I'm sitting there thinking, I'm on the phone with my sister, and I'm thinking, why am I out? I'm missing all of this. That was the one thing I really wanted to experience. And it turned out that there was a woman out in the lobby that was having an experience. And she eventually came over to me in the hallway, and she needed to talk. And we shared some conversation. And then we went and sat down and we talked. And she had been at the Narnon conference, but she wasn't in the business meeting. She was out in the lobby. But we had this whole conversation and connection, and it was amazing because that was where I was supposed to be. And I don't know if it's... Well, I do know. I do know that she was supposed to hear what I shared, and I was supposed to hear what she shared. Because actually what she shared with me was very specific to something that was going on recent for me in my recovery. So that's how higher power works in my life. You know, there are things I get... You know, I was looking forward to tonight, and I was really worried. I thought, oh my gosh, I'm wondering if my back is going to go out, and I won't be... But look, I'm here, and I'm not having any pain, and I haven't even had to blow my nose, okay? So this is like, yeah, this is a miracle. No, it's higher power. Higher power is right here with me right now. I feel absolutely perfect right now. And yet I had all these symptoms just, you know, 40 minutes ago. So there you have it. This is where I am in my recovery, and I'm willing, and I'm signed up, and there's just no other way that I want to do life. This is it for me. I'm committed. And I thank you for coming tonight and listening, and I just I can feel the love in this room, and it's just precious. It's absolutely precious, and I thank you.